Hi, I'm Ben Richardson, and you're listening to the Karate Podcast, where we talk about karate, the competitive sport of Kumite, and the warrior's journey. Brought to you in association with Kumite Coach, the world's first progressive online high-definition coaching platform, created by coaches and fighters for coaches, fighters, and students of karate. Join KumiteCoach.com today and take your karate to the next level. Okay, everyone, welcome to another episode of the Karate Podcast. I'm really excited to have with us today Ben Campbell Sensei. Ben is the fifth dan in Shotokan Karate. For 11 years, he was on the England squad as an international fighter. He's two times bronze European medalist, four times British champion, six times English champion, and also in 2003 world Shukukai champions. So an amazing career just in the competition scene, but also a successful karate school owner and someone who has a vision for allowing people to access karate at any level, which I'm particularly interested in. So we're going to get into that into the podcast. So Ben, thanks so much for being with us today. I know you're really busy with the second dojo, so thanks for your time.
No problem.
So Ben, just as we usually start, I'd like to take you way back and just find out how you got involved in karate.
I got involved in karate because my dad is an instructor, he's a sensei. So I wanted to basically follow his footsteps and do karate and be with my dad. So that's how I got into it at the age of seven.
Oh, for a young age there. And I noticed as I looked through your website, it talks about, you still teach the traditional aspects of karate. You're not purely focused on kumite. So what was that journey like for you being a traditionalist from the offset and then finding your way into the competition scene?
It was all very traditional based, and there was always a strong club of fighting. So it was something that just kind of technically just happened. But then as the world's moved on since coming 30 and starting my own club, the traditional ways are kind of frowned upon. The younger ones don't want to do that. So it's trying to find new ways to get them to embrace karate and still find it fun. So a lot of people's interpretation of karate traditional is going up and down the dojo, doing basics.
More
watate turns, and it's systematic boring to a lot of people. They don't see the qualities, the fundamental basics they get from that. So it's trying to teach them that in a kind of a fun way. So that's, we're constantly changing what we do at the club, because if it doesn't work, we just change it. I won't allow having a senior grade who doesn't know a kata, who can't do a good stance, who can't make a fist properly. I don't force anybody to fight. I don't force anybody to just be kumite. They must have a kind of an all-round package here. But obviously the kumite is the way I've been successful, where now my club is being successful.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I found in my own experience that a lot of Shotokan-based competitors still do have that grounding in the traditional and try to, be competent in all aspects, the kata, kumite and the kion. And I think, as a coach myself, there's a lot of value in that. Have you found that, just from my own experience, I've found that the younger kids tend to really get enthusiastic towards the kata side of things when it comes to competition. Not so much the kumite. I think once you get bashed in the nose, it makes you rethink how cool that potentially is. But what's your experience been of competitive karate there with the juniors?
The complete opposite.
Oh, really?
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. That's great.
I can stand in front of my guys, and even with some of the newer beginners, I'll say, okay, pads on, the excitement of putting the pads on and having a rough and tumble. Whereas I could say, okay, gradings, so our gradings on Saturday, guys, we've got to knuckle down with our basics, it's got to be a kata. You can see the looks on their faces, the kind of, but they do understand, I do talk to them about it to say, this, unfortunately, I'm simplifying it from how I was brought up.
Yeah.
But they've still got to know the fundamental basics. Yeah. And slowly, I think some of them are coming around, but hoping. We're not known for kata. So we are not known for kata. We are a kumite club.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we do traditional stuff here. And self-defense, that kind of stuff, they've got to know the basics. But obviously, with the pandemic, lockdowns and all that, when the club was open, it was very difficult to keep their motivation and want them to come to karate when there was having to stand so far apart. And I just wanted to put my arms around anybody who still wants to be involved in karate after all the time. So then giving them basics and kata, which they didn't want, I didn't really do that much of it. It was more sport-based. Now things are opening up. Now the second dojo is going to be open, hopefully, in a couple of months. That will either be for our Kaisho kids, the younger ones, and kata. And then this dojo where I'm now will be more for kumite.
Yeah, okay.
That's kind of the plan.
Yeah, and you do have a fantastic facility. I know you showed me before started. The space looks immense. It looks, you know, it's one of those facilities you walk in and you can, you know, feel, I think, the path for success is there. You know, you've got everything you need.
Been very lucky. One of my good friends owned the building, gave me the option to buy the top floor and the front. And it's been amazing. But obviously during the pandemic, it's been a bit of a struggle. I had great support from Sandville Council, the local authorities, to keep going. But I had to shut down for 6 months because I couldn't do Zoom online.
Yeah.
How do you block a punch? How do you block a punch on Zoom? You move the camera out of the way. I just couldn't. We are known for kumite. We're known for having a scrap. I've just struggled. Yeah. And I'm just thankful. Thank all my students and parents because they just supported me and they stayed faithful and they're back here helping, training, winning. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
So Ben, you mentioned that your dad was an instructor and that got you into karate. Was he the main influence through your career as a competitor or other people? I'm sure there's loads of people that have been involved in your journey, but are there some standout people that, you know, took you certain places, you know, to that next level, as it were?
I think from the age of 16, my people who influenced me changed massively. First one, obviously, who gave me a chance was Tiki Donovan. One of the most scariest men at 16 years old ever. pre-training in Romford, 2 weeks away on my own. Europeans, Bratislava, 1995. So I was with Joe Long. There's a lot of people from London. I'm from Dudley, near Birmingham, obviously by the accent. So I felt like a bit of an outsider and stuff. And I was the only one to medal at that Europeans, that juniors. And yeah, even when I lost in the semi-finals to, I think it was Russia or something like that. I remember Tiki looking at me and just rolling his eyes in disgust and walking away. And then it was kind of, am I allowed to swear on here, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be fine. Because obviously then, when the repertoires came through, I remember Tiki coming up to me, 16 years old, and saying, don't you fucking lose this one. And I was like... And then I fought the German good kids. I beat him 4-1. I came off. Tiki came over to me, gave me a big hug, kissed me on top of the head. Says, "That's how you do it." And I was like, "Does he like me or does he not? Is he?" and that's how the journey started. So yeah, Tiki was a massive influence to me because he talked to you really nice, be your friend. But then literally, when he had to pull you, he pulled you, and then. That little bit of uncertainty. And that's what I try and keep in my club. I'm the friend, I'm the instructor, but ultimately I'm the bully in here. I'm the one who basically tells them what to do and I want them to get better and achieve. So
yeah,
that's the kind of, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, 11 years as an England international is a long time.
It's on and off, yes. I had periods where I was working, then I had some time off and then went back into it. But yeah, 11 years on and off as a... lottery funded as well.
Amazing. And so do you remember over that time period, did your goal shift as a competitor or was there always one goal in mind for you?
No, the goal was to always win the Europeans, the World Championships, whatever I was going to. That was it. And there was a certain person called, I don't know if you heard of him, Junior LeVerve.
Yes.
Yeah, if it wasn't for him, certain competitions, I think I would have achieved a bit more. First round at the Europeans. But yeah, he was my nemesis, but I've got so much respect for him now. I speak to him, he's classic as a friend, but on the tatami.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the guy that kept coming up in your draw.
Oh, I remember Tiki sitting down on the coach on the way to the Europeans in Istanbul saying, "You draw. Do you want to know it?" So I went, "Not really. Well, I'm going to tell you anyway. You got Junior." And I lost 6-4 to him in the first round. And unfortunately, he lost in the semi-final to Allegas and got robbed. So I missed out the repercharge. But then we got bronze in the team. So it wasn't a bad outing. So actually, no, it wasn't bronze. It was silver.
Fantastic. That's fantastic. Amazing. And coming up through the England squad with a... were there certain fighters you aspired to be like or take things from, or you very much just focused on becoming your own fighter?
I used to have, and this might sound silly, I used to have a hit list, 10 people that I would like to fight against. Not that I could beat them,
yeah,
but 10 people who I wanted to go against. Top of that list was Terry Daly. I think Terry Daly was probably the most gifted technical fighters ever. He was just the way he thought, the way he approached it. I used to see in all of him. I always wanted to fight him, always. And speak to him now, and I tell him, remind him all the time that I wanted to fight him. He just gives me a little wink and a little smile as a laugh. But no, there's just certain ones I just wanted to put my skills against other people, whether they could beat me or not. I think I achieved a lot because I was scared. Yeah. I was scared of losing. So that was what gave me the fire, I think, just to go for it.
And obviously, you know, you achieved at a really high level as a fighter. What was it like transitioning from your primary focus as being a competitor into being a coach?
It happened because I got injured.
Right.
And that's the honest truth. I thought my world had fallen apart in 2009. I was fighting at competition in Warsaw. I was actually fighting Junior LeVerve student in the quarterfinals, and my ACL just snapped. I was bouncing and it just went. Never had a serious injury like that before. Knew I'd done something bad. Went to the doctor's hospitals, had a lot of surgery, came back, tried to get back to competing, but I wasn't the same. I didn't trust the leg anymore. I didn't trust the knee because I didn't trust it. I couldn't train as hard. And being quite a big-headed, confident young man at the time, I think I've calmed down a bit now. I just couldn't stand the fact that the young whippersnappers who are quicker, who can train, would beat me.
Yeah.
That was the hard pill. I couldn't swallow. So I basically decided to open a club, and it's the best decision I've ever made. And if I could go back in time and not go to that competition and get injured, I still would. Because that snapping my knee changed everything. It's got me, the club, the people around me, my dojo, a great karate family. Yeah, it's amazing. So yeah, at the time I didn't understand it. Yeah.
And so moving into a coach, and I guess, you know, it takes time to build up competitors, but you know, going to those first competitions as the coach as opposed to the fighter, was that hard to do? Was that quite enjoyable, not having...
No, not enjoyable at all. I remember the first time to my daughter was started training with me. Remember the first couple of the first competitions she went into and someone kicked her in the face. And I'm the coach, and I didn't know what to do. So I remember just starting to laugh. So I didn't know what I was meant to do. I remember her looking at me, looking at me saying, "Oh, don't laugh here." And then she just come out and she just banged this girl in the face out of rage. And I'm like, so yeah, there's been a lot. a lot of things done wrong, a lot of mistakes, a lot of good points, but I started from a grassroots club. So yeah. I was learning, they were learning, we've learned together. And I'm grateful I've still got some of them students still training today.
Yeah, fantastic. So as a coach and as someone who's opened their academy and you're getting into the, you know, the transitioning from fighter to coach, in the dojo, were you still then teaching the traditional Shotokan as well? Or was it?
Yes, we always start with the basics. You can't throw a punch with your mitts on if you can't throw a punch with it, or can't make a fist. So yeah, we always start with certain punches, certain kicks, stances. Why do you bend your foot knee? Because you can't move forward if your leg's straight. Certain things like that. They need to know how to walk before the good one. So we've got to do that. But that's now how my Kaisho Kids thing now. So I've got one of my older students. She now teaches the younger ones. Mm. So that then allows me not to slow my class down as much.
Yeah.
So when they come out of the Kaisho Kids class into mine, they already know the stances, the terminology, the environment of the dojo, that they need to bow here, bow there, ask to leave the room, those certain things. That's what she does. It stops me. So it's kind of, don't have to slow the class down for the bigger ones.
Yeah. And so as a coach, as the process of bringing competitors on to those higher levels, has that changed over time?
It's changing all the time. I wish there was a magic wand where I could work out which one is going to be a good fighter, which one wants it, which one's just doing it for, you know, someone to walk through the door, you think, my gosh, they look the right part. But no, I think it's that fight or flight moment when they get hit in the face for the first time, what they do, and it still shocks me to this day. Some of the ones, I've got a 9-year-old who I keep saying to her, you can't take your next grade, you need to slow down, and she's fantastic. She fights, she does catering competitions, she does the basics, brilliant, but she's 9. And she's training with the big ones, and it's kind of, you're not meant to be like this. So, no. For me, I happily hold my hands up and just say, you know what, I've got that wrong. Yeah, let's go down this path. So, no, I'm not very rigid. I make changes in my club all the time, which infuriates my wife. And that's the thing that when you say about being a business owner and having a dojo and stuff like that. The reason why I got my dojo is because we were a good club in a community centre.
Yeah.
Around where I live, there's a lot of poor clubs with their own buildings. And when people walk in and they've got the trophies on the wall and the medals and they're all this, the wow factor. And automatically those people think they're the best clubs.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought would take us to the next level. But I don't advertise for our classes. It's literally word of mouth. And we haven't got a big club. We've got a good club. And that's our way to stay. I don't want 100 students. I'll be here too often. I'm already here a lot.
Oh, fantastic. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Ben, was obviously, you know, you were a fighter. You're in that top international level. Do you feel karate has changed a lot since then to now? And if within those changes, how do you feel you've had to change your own understanding of what it takes to be a top level fighter?
And this is going back to when I mentioned, like Mervyn said, the conversations, the mindset, the preparation, that kind of, these are the conversations I had with him. When I was fighting, it was a fight as such. You could go out and go and give him a bang in the face and then have another bang and have another. Now it's more athletic. Now it's more sport as such. It's more tactical. It's more, I don't know, there's a lot more thought goes into his now. But I do think there's a lot of overthinking now.
But
the rules are constantly changing, the points are changing, what you need to compete at those levels is changing. Whereas before, it was kind of just straight. You can go to whatever you want, Europeans, Worlds, you go for your federation. It's a lot has changed. It's a lot more dynamic, athletic than he was before. But obviously, social media exposure, that helps as well.
And with that understanding of the changes, do you integrate a lot of power training or agility training in your students as part of their preparation?
We were doing strength and conditioning classes before the pandemic when things were a bit more. But obviously, since the restart, we've just concentrated really on pair work and stuff that we haven't really done. Gone back to the S&C and the equipment based stuff as yet. But yeah, we were doing that before. With bags and speed balls and stuff like that. I'm happy to change the training we do just so it brings variety.
Yeah.
Every class is different to mine. The motto of the dojo, the class finishes when it finishes. We have classes in our dojo that take about 30 minutes. The class is meant to be 2 hours, 30 minutes is done.
Yeah.
And then, because I think a lot of people are, their mindset is value for money and time.
Yeah.
And if people know they're coming to train for 2 hours, it's trying to get their mindsets to change, to give me everything when I want it. Not worry that they've got to last the full 2 hours, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
When people say, oh yeah, I trade 10 hours a week, well, that's great. But 10 hours doing what? Is that high intensity? Is it dynamic, explosive, or is it just plodding along?
Yeah.
And that's the one thing our clubs aren't like that. So.
Yeah, and one of my own experiences was when I first went to Japan, which was fairly recent, I think 2014 or 15. I was expecting these long, grueling training sessions, and we did between 45 minutes and an hour. But it was so, they packed so much into that hour.
Yeah,
it was incredible. And it really changed my mindset around, what should be expected of a training session or a length of class time at an academy or something like that.
But when you have new students or they contact you via social media, they ask how much the lessons. So it's one of the first, they ask about the quality, they don't ask about.
Yeah, that's true.
They ask about the price and how long for. And it's very difficult because those aren't the bits that matter in Motor Club.
Yeah.
So yesterday, hot day at the dojo, we trained for an hour and a half. For an hour, it was just a bit of catter because of the grades next week. Then it was 30 minutes of explosive stuff. Yeah, enough.
Yeah.
So no, that's how we work here. That's my teaching style. If it works, I'm obviously doing something right. If it stops working, I'll change it.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I wanted to touch on what you mentioned to me earlier about access to karate. I think you said your goal was to have the first, how did you phrase it, fully accessible dojo for people with disabilities. Is that right? I never said that correctly.
Welcome back. You froze. Your face was just like this.
Yeah, I was saying to you, have I said that right? And you're just like staring at me. I was like, oh, he's really mad at me. Obviously not said the right thing.
So when we bought the building, it's on an industrial estate. And there's a lot of access at the front. One of the councillors who helped me get the building basically said, what's your vision? What would you like this for? And I says, I want it for everybody. I have a few people who have got disabilities or other issues, ADHD, autistic and stuff. And I think karate, they say about inclusion, they just want to just train like everybody else. And that's it. I don't understand all the issues they have. I try my best. But obviously, when they come in here, we have a rule that everyone gets on in the dojo. What happens outside is irrelevant. So literally no mobile phones are allowed up here. There's no outside influences. Everyone just gets on here. If you don't fit in, you got to go. And that goes with the disability part as well. So we haven't really started this as we wanted to because of the pandemic and because of the build and stuff. But the aim is, as we are in the centre of the country, to have this available for people to come and hire, to use the English Karate Federation or other federations because it ticks all the boxes for people with disabilities.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know it's horrible. We've got mental health issues now through a lot more with the pandemic and stuff. This building, I want it for everyone to use, not just me. I don't want to be here all the time. I've got four children. I want it used, but not doesn't have to be all but me.
Yeah. Yeah, great.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
And you know, it's just as I mentioned before we started, you know, my niece has severe disabilities. My sister's had to campaign for years in the courts to get certain things changed just to give her access to education. We talked about access to physical activities, and it's just so difficult for some people to get. And
we have a school at the road for disability. In the daytime, this dojo is empty; it's not being used.
Mm.
So the aim, hopefully, these groups can come and use this. Because it is going to be sitting idle. And obviously, it's more exposure for the club. It helps the community, helps the area. Obviously, with the Commonwealth Games up the road, I want it used. There used to be a place when I was growing up, say about influences, a place called Dudley Martial Arts. It used to be a centre, and he had everything there. Kickboxing, boxing, karate, aikido, jiu-jitsu. All in one place.
Yeah.
Now, two dojos, long as I can do my lessons, there's nothing stopping something else being here. And disability, young kids, anything. So yeah, that's what I would like. Whether it pans out, yeah, but that's what I would like.
Fantastic. So that's obviously a big aspiration for yourself in terms of where you'd like to take things with the business and connecting to your community.
I hate that, by the way.
What?
Business. It's not a business. People say it all the time. It's not a business. I hate it. I know it's a business, but I won't accept it. I'm a Christchurch club.
Your paid passion.
It just makes it sound like I'm doing it for the money. That's why. So I've been very lucky. I don't.
I think you come across as someone who's passionate about what you do.
Sorry. As my wife says, and most of my students, when I told her about the podcast, they're like, "Are you sure you're going to go and do this?" And I was like, "Boy, you can't lie. It shows on your face." I'm like, and that's what I think. I sent you the message saying, "Please, what kind of questions are you ask me? Because if you ask me certain ones, I'm not going to be able to lie."
Oh, fantastic. I was going to touch on what goals do you have moving forward as a coach for Kaisho?
A bit like Pinky in the Brain. So what we do today, try to take over the world. No. My aim is to have a great environment club-wise for people who do karate, for people who no longer want to do cross, but still want to be involved with the people who are here, for us to continue to go abroad and compete, to continue to have England internationals, where we've got three competing this weekend at the Junior Europeans.
Oh, fantastic.
And I wish them all the luck.
Let's have a shout out for their names then.
So from my club here in Raleigh, we've got Adela. And then from the Coventry one, under says jury, we've got Neve and Christy. Fantastic. Adela should be fighting in about an hour and a half. Okay. So I'll be have a look. Yes. So that's the plan. If people want a path for progression, then we've got one here for them. If they want to compete and have the ability to have access to that, we've got it here. If they just want to come and train and be part of the club and get the belts, we've got it here. If you just want to be part of the club and not take your grades, just have somewhere to go once a week, that's fine as well. I'm not here to make people all do the same thing, because you don't know what they want, do you?
No, that's it.
No, I would never put myself down as a club coach until I snap my knee. And it's the best thing that ever happened to them. So I think people got to find their own way, what they want to do. The choice, don't like it, that's fine. So
that's great. It's been such an insight talking with you, Ben. And you know, you're projecting a huge amount of passion for what you do for the sport of karate and the tradition of karate.
Love it.
We can tell.
Love it.
You know, I want to thank you for being on the podcast. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure I'll bump into you at some of the competitions coming up over there.
Please say hello.
Over there, I will definitely say hello.
Can I just do one last shout out, please?
Yeah, absolutely.
To a boy I've coached abroad who did very well last month. You might have heard of him, Brandon Wilkins Silver at the Senior Europeans. Well done, boy. Yeah. I'll say that before I go. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. We had Brandon on yesterday, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, we had a great chat. It was really good.
Did he mention
fun.
Me? No,
I'll
he didn't.
To, so I'll
can,
have to can look
you,
back.
Can you take that bit out of there now? Okay, take that out. Don't want it in. Don't give him no play. I don't like the boy. Okay, thank you very much.
All right. Cheers, Fred. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Cheers, bye.